Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There is something about reality TV that compels many of us to watch. If you dispute that, we'll just take a look at all the reality programs that are on the air. It's frequently written off as trash TV, but there is something important going on here. So let's talk about it. We're joined by Danielle J. Lindemann, a sociologist and author of the book, True Story, What Reality TV Says About Us. And you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. Text us at that call-in number, 833-877-8255. And Danielle Lindemann, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, we're excited to have you on and to have this conversation. Let's start off with a clip. And this is from what some people call, like you refer to it, as a groundbreaking reality TV program. This is from 1992, The Real World.
This is the true story.
You know what luggage this is?
Seven strangers.
You sell drugs. Why do you have a fever?
Picked to live in a loft.
I would love to shut the f*** up.
And have their lives taped.
Don't argument.
To find out what happens
when people stop being polite.
Get out of my face!
Why
so
is that?
And start getting real.
The real world. Oh my God.
All right. I'm Heather.
Hi, Heather.
I'm just running from the door.
Andre.
The door opened and I saw five other people. Nothing like me or most of the people that I hang out with.
So how old are you?
I'm 19.
19.
Oh, baby. Baby.
Woo!
You know.
Go ahead. Go, Heather.
What is that?
It's a beeper.
Oh. Do you sell drugs? Why do you have a beeper?
Once she said the bit about the drug dealer, I really want to talk to her. I really want to know what she thinks.
Okay, so everybody's going to be against me because I'm the only Southerner.
The beeper, I knew it. I just was hoping it wasn't going to be a series of comments, you know, like, Kevin, do you play basketball?
You play ball around here?
I don't consider myself racist in any way. I don't even know how it ended up like that.
Danielle, so beepers, that's the cultural, you know, artifact for sure. But we saw a lot here going on. A lot of it was deliberately constructed in the casting of these programs, and they were looking to generate conflict, but specifically around race, gender, and class. So how does that work?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, this is really like a seminal reality TV moment. Some people say this is like the first reality TV show where they're casting people who come from these kind of different walks of life, which they still do on reality TV, right? But as a sociologist, this is really fascinating to me because when you look at how different people are when they've grown up in different places, you really understand how influential our social environment is in kind of shaping who we are as people. And in reality TV, oftentimes that kind of comes out in terms of conflict.
Right. And so the idea of a reality TV show of putting people living their lives in front of a camera, that was not brand new for The Real World. So I want to talk about another program that happened. This is actually people, when they look down their nose on reality TV, you could say, well, there was a groundbreaking reality TV program on PBS in 1973, 50 years ago. We should be celebrating the anniversary of An American Family, the Loud family, and what they went through. And I'm going to play a clip from that, and you can tell us more about it.
Because number one, I really can't understand how people are successful, how people work, how people drive at something, how people get ideas. I don't know. You know, I don't care. I'm not. I sometimes I think of myself as the perfect combination of non-existence. So, because I really can't see how other people exist other than my way of life, just living on people.
That is a cop out when you talk like that.
It is. But you know, that's part of me. It's just the way it is.
So we are to accept you on the suchness of yourself.
You're supposed to accept me on the suchness of my or the inevitability of my failure. And it's going to be that I failed so far, and I'm going to fail again. I'm going to keep on failing until I just sort of drip into the ground, you know, melt right in, because I really can't do anything.
That was Lance Loud, and 20 years old, and he was just talking about his inhibition, that he was a loser. And this is 1973. And this was a big, big deal at the time, Danielle.
Yeah. I mean, so this is PBS's An American Family, as you said, right? And the fact that this is, 50 years ago, makes me feel really old, right? But also goes to show, right, that reality TV kind of isn't this new convention. It didn't just emerge. It's been kind of simmering and brewing for a while, whether you think it goes back to sort of these more documentary-style shows like An American Family, started with The Real World. So in this PBS show, they followed this family by the name of Loud, and there was a lot of conflict. There was divorce. There was a son, Lance, who... with a gay son living in their family. And so, you know, in 1973, this was like a huge thing to have on TV, an openly gay person.
And then they asked for divorce on TV as well. That was the family breakup. That was big too. That was covered by all the media. It's like, this is crazy. How does this happen?
Divorce was a lot more stigmatized. I mean, it's still stigmatized, but it was more stigmatized back then too, right?
So putting that on television, people did see that as we're looking at something about ourselves that we don't normally see or talk about. And was that seen as a positive?
I mean, I don't think that there's one answer. And I still don't think that there's one answer to that, right? I mean, I think a lot of people saw it as negative, right? Like, we don't want to see this happening. They saw it as kind of saw it as trashy, which people still see reality TV as trashy. But I think other people kind of appreciate that shows like that kind of hold up a mirror to ourselves. But I do think there's also kind of like a hierarchy when it comes to reality TV, with people kind of maybe more appreciating these more documentary style shows like An American Family, whereas at the other end of the spectrum, the shows like, you know, Bad Girls Club or something like that are seen as kind of less appealing in some ways.
Well, there's a question about how artificial reality TV can be at times, and whether or not they're deliberately playing to our most crass instincts or not. And we can talk more about that when we come back from the break. So we're talking to Danielle Lindemann, a sociologist, author of the book True Story, What Reality TV Says About Us. We want to hear what reality TV shows you watch. I really want to hear about why you watch them. And if you've ever learned anything from reality TV that really you had a light bulb moment go on about yourself or relationships or how to conduct your life, you know, the way people are, we can learn a lot about people and their motivations, their loyalties, if their loyalties are actually sincere, there's a lot to pick apart. So let's do that. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Big Sun Solar, committed to helping businesses strive towards energy independence and conservation. Solar is a great way for businesses to lower their carbon footprint. More at bigsunsolar.com/TPR.
This is the story of my family. We're the Duggars. That's me. I'm Michelle. There's Jim Bob, my wonderful husband, and our children. Josh is our oldest. He married Anna, and they had our first grandchildren, Mackenzie, Michael, and Marcus. Then there's Jana, John David, Jill, she married Derek, Jessa, Ginger, Joseph, Josiah, Joy Anna, J Jedediah, Jeremiah, Jason, James, Justin, Jackson, Johanna, Jennifer, Jordan, and our youngest daughter, Josie. That's a grand total of 19, and I delivered every one of them.
Of course, with this many kids, we do things a little differently than most families. It isn't always easy, but somehow we make it all work.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about reality TV, and we're joined by Danielle Linneman. She's written a book called True Story, What Reality TV Says About Us. 19 and Counting, the story of the Duggars. There's now a documentary coming out on Amazon Prime, A Shiny Happy People, The Duggar Family Secrets. Josh Duggar, the oldest son, he's now in prison. He's a pedophile, a convicted sex offender. There's allegations that he was molesting his sisters, and the family, the father knew about it, the adults knew about it, and they covered it up as they continued their program. So, Danielle, there's a lot there. They were presenting one view to the world and something else when the cameras were not there.
Yeah, so I actually was interviewed for that docuseries that's coming out on Amazon. Yeah, I mean, I think that show in a lot of ways is in some ways a microcosm of reality TV, why we react to reality TV, why we watch reality TV, the sort of difference or the disjuncture between like what's happening in front of the camera and what's happening behind the camera, which I think is what you're talking about here. I mean, and listen, you know, a lot of people talk to me about reality TV and say like, well, these shows are fake, right? Like, it's not these people's real lives. They're fakety fake, right? Like, these casts are curated. People are plied with alcohol, not in the Duggar case, but in other cases, right? You know, these things are frankenbitten together to create a narrative. It's not real. And I think that's true, right? I don't think anybody, I think most people at this point, right, we're pretty savvy. I think most people watching reality TV know this is not like a pure mirror of reality. But at the same time, as I argue in my book, I do think it can teach us about reality, even though it's a bit of a kind of funhouse mirror.
Let's go to a caller, Julian. Julian, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say my reality show that I love is RuPaul's Drag Race. It's an incredible show that brings me confidence. It puts my head up high when I'm down. It empowers me every day, and I think that it's a beautiful reality show, and I think that everyone should find a RuPaul's Drag Race in life.
Oh, okay, Julian. So just to help you amplify that point, let's play a clip.
I was feeling like Mimi's kind of turned over a new leaf, and then guess who came back? The old Mimi.
I just don't think it's appropriate to talk about that had nothing to do with anything that's happened here.
Well, guess what, Mimi? We did. You, Mimi, I'm first. Mimi, I'm first was number third in the voting. I could not believe it. Out of all 50 bitches.
Do not attack my fans, bitch.
Of the that I've seen, you don't have that many. Ooh. So out of 50 mother bitches that have been here, how did you manage that?
Because they need someone to go home first.
And you know what? Now, here we are in Texas, and we're having this, and in many parts of the red states of the nation, having these laws being passed, you know, trying to outlaw drag and stuff. It's on television, and we're seeing these are interesting people with compelling lives and a lot going on. So what is it about RuPaul's Drag Race, Danielle, that you think people are drawn to?
Well, first of all, I just love that you're in Texas and your first call was this person giving this amazing testimonial about RuPaul's Drag Race, which also is happens to be my favorite reality TV show as well. And I think, you know, people are drawn to that show for a lot of different reasons, right? Like, especially people who, you know, do feel marginalized, right, by the system, who can, you know, queer people, right? Like people who maybe don't do their gender or present their gender in ways that we would consider to be normative, they can look at that show and, you know, see themselves in it a little bit. Well, the thing that drives me to RuPaul's Drag Race, though, is that, like, it really has something to teach me. Like, everything I know about the world of drag, I know from RuPaul's Drag Race. And I know we don't tend to think about reality TV as being kind of educational, and we shouldn't accept it like at face value as just being an educational kind of document. But it really does have a lot to teach us. It takes us into these areas of social life that a lot of people have never seen or experienced before. And so I think that's part of the kind of beauty of a show like that for me.
Well, when people say that drag is not an art form, I would tell them you need to watch some of these episodes, and I think that you will change your mind.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's even when I show this show to my students also, and, you know, a lot of them have even been to drag shows, but, you know, the ones who haven't been exposed to drag will say, like, wow, there's so much that goes into this practice that you just wouldn't know about having not been exposed to the show.
Let's go to the caller. We have Angie on the line. And Angie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I don't watch any reality shows that let like a full extreme life of love and people. I feel like that it takes us away from living our own lives. And the outrageousness, I feel like everything's contrived. And the worst thing about TV, of course, is commercials. So that keeps me away from a ton of things. You know, I enjoy looking into them like a window. But as far as following someone else for years in a contrived place or somewhat, you know, I grew up around drag queens. I grew up around a lot of different things. So it's hard to shock me anymore. And I think people just thrive on the shock value of things. They have to have more and more outrageous things to get off or whatever. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling, Angie. Appreciate it. So to Angie's point about having to continue with the shock value, I mean, I think we've gone as far as you can go with that. But Danielle?
Well, I don't know. I feel like, you know, every time I think we've gone as far as we can go, reality TV kind of reinvents itself, right? So I'm not sure if that's true. But I think, you know, a lot of people tell me that they don't like reality TV, and I have no stake. I mean, that's fine, right? There are a lot of things that other people like that I don't like. Like, I know it's sacrilegious to say this in Texas, but I don't particularly like football. Other people do, right? And so for me, it's not that important whether people personally enjoy it. That's completely a valid preference. But I think it's important to look at reality TV because it is so popular in terms of what it can teach us about why we watch and what it can teach us about ourselves.
I'm going to play, this is a clip from the Celebrity Apprentice. And when people say, I mean, this, the mania around reality TV led to, you know, Donald Trump becoming president. There's no denying that. He was able to cultivate himself this image of as a successful businessman. And so in this clip, this is interesting, looking at it in retrospect, now that we know more about him and his family. This is the challenge that he had to these celebrities is that they were supposed to construct some sort of brand, fashion brand for his wife, Melania. The Dennis Rodman team spelt her name wrong. And so Dennis gets fired. But it's interesting because Trump didn't even notice that the name was spelt wrong until Stephen Baldwin pointed it out. Let's give a listen.
We look at Melania's exquisite beauty and her products as works of art, which is why we were inspired to frame them.
I spelled my name wrong.
It's incredible.
It's all over the place and nobody even noticed. Amazing.
It's unbelievable.
It's shocking. I'm surprised you were able to hold your tongue.
Is that spelled wrong?
Yes.
How do you spell Melania?
M-E.
You just might have picked up something very interesting. Who picked that up?
In all fairness, Stephen, you picked it up, to what I see, faster than anybody.
In terms of negatives,
You know what? It doesn't matter. Dennis, look, I can go in through a long, big thing. I can talk about they didn't like the color, they didn't like this, they didn't like that. The fact is, you spelled her name wrong. Mm. So, Dennis, you lost.
Of course.
You're fired.
So historians are now going to have to watch Celebrity Apprentice and these things in order to figure out Donald Trump's how he rose to presidency. And what will they see, Danielle?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that many people point out to me, right? Or that I point out to other people when they talk about, well, reality TV is just kind of this frivolous sideshow. Like, I don't like it. Like, what's the point, right? And again, not liking it is a perfectly valid choice, right, or preference. But at the same time, I think it's really almost dangerous to say, like, let's not pay attention to reality TV, because as we've seen, right, it can have real world consequences in terms of, you know, the media empires that it creates, and in terms of even, right, the politicians. Now it's intersection with politics and the politicians that it creates. It's interesting, that season of the show was the last season I watched of The Celebrity Apprentice, I believe, because I felt like Trump's decision-making was very capricious, and I prefer, like, it to be logical and make sense. So that's kind of interesting. But, yeah, I know, I agree. This is kind of a historical document at this point. Again, just pointing to the importance of really paying attention to and parsing these reality TV programs.
Jumping back to the RuPaul Drag Race and some of these other programs, they put people on TV. This is an opportunity for folks to be on TV who otherwise never would be on TV. Why is that important?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, kind of a double-sided coin, right? Because, again, it's kind of shining a spotlight into these kind of nooks and crannies of social life, showing us, giving a platform for these populations that have been marginalized, right? At the same time, sometimes reality TV shows these populations in kind of stereotypical ways, right? Especially, you know, queer people, people of color, women, right? Like, the list goes on and on. There's a lot of stereotyping and stereotypical portrayals on reality TV. So it is kind of a two-sided coin where they're giving a platform for these populations who historically in scripted media have not had such a big platform. But at the same time, you know, there's always the question of how much harm is that platform doing if it's, you know, resulting in these stereotype portrayals.
And is that something that happens at the producer level? They're deciding we're looking for a specific type, and so they will cast the stereotypical individual?
Yeah, I mean, I think they cast people who kind of play into our, like, long-term historical assumptions about what people in various groups are alike, which I think can be kind of comforting and pacifying to viewers because it kind of reconfirms their worldviews. And I do think there's some more awareness and there's kind of more pushback against that now in terms of these stereotypical portrayals. But certainly historically, reality TV has kind of been this, like, well where, like, these stereotypes that have existed for sometimes hundreds of years have really pooled.
So reality TV, of course, it presents itself as real, and then we find out things like storage wars or tow truck wars or whatever else you got, they have been all constructed, and they have been faked to quite a... So how much juice does a show lose when the general public realizes that this is not real? It's all a performance.
Personally, don't think it loses that much juice because, again, I feel like at this, you know, like the last caller said, right? At this point, I think we're pretty savvy. We kind of know that, right? To some extent, you know, and there's a spectrum, but to some extent, none of these shows are real, right? I mean, but nothing really is real. Like, that's a cultural document that we create. The news, right? We're still picking what stories to tell and how to tell them. So I don't know if we ever produce anything that's a pure mirror of reality. So I don't know. I mean, there's this great moment in the show The Hills, which has been scripted, right? Like, there's for years it was scripted, but it was a reality show. And they kind of pull out and reveal that the characters are on, like, kind of a sound stage. But at the end of the day, people didn't really care about that. The show got a reboot. So I don't think these shows necessarily lose that much juice when people realize kind of the unreality of it all.
All right. Well, let's continue to talk about this. The book is True Story, What Reality TV Says About Us. We're joined by the author, Danielle J. Lindemann, and she's a sociologist, associate professor of sociology at Lehigh University, studies gender, sexuality, family, and culture. If you want to call in, tell us what reality programs you watch, which ones that you think have a lot to say to us. What have they said to you? Have you learned anything, any valuable lessons? I know I have. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. It's The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
If anybody has a hidden immunity idol and you want to play it, now would be the time to do so.
Tap. I have an idol. It's a blue idol. I like to play for myself.
Okay.
I have another one. A red one. I would like to play for Aubrey.
Thanks, Ty.
Thank you.
These are both hidden immunity idols. Any votes cast for Ty or Aubrey will not count.
Hey, Jeff. I've got a secret advantage, which is a legacy advantage. This is only good for right now, and I don't need a souvenir, so there you go.
All right. This is the legacy advantage. Any votes cast for Sarah will not count.
Jeff.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna get on the immunity train and give you that because I just feel like being in the final five.
All right. This is also a hidden immunity idol. Any votes cast for Troyzan will not count. Any votes cast for Ty, Aubrey, Sarah, Troyzan will not count. You could not vote for Culpepper. He had immunity, which means, Sari, it doesn't matter what votes are in the urn because the only person who can receive votes
is me.
Is you. And for what it's worth, not a single vote in here has your name on it. This is a historic tribal council, as you become the first person in 34 seasons to be voted out simply because there literally is no other choice.
It's crazy that Survivor has been on that long. We're talking about reality TV. The name of the book is True Story, What Reality TV Says About Us. The author is Danielle Lindemann. And so that is so ridiculous that it makes no sense. And so, Danielle, the reason I went to that clip is because it just shows you how when the caller is saying they have to keep up the ante and make things more outrageous. And it's like it is like a farce of itself. Your reaction?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. But on the other hand, right, I don't know. I sucked in my breath a little. I'm like, ooh, plot twist, you know? I mean, but Survivor is such an important show when it comes to reality TV. I mean, Survivor really has been, as you said, it's been on for so long. My students don't know a world without Survivor. Literally, that show has been on longer than they've been alive. So it really is this cultural juggernaut. And that's the show that really kind of showed us how lucrative reality TV could be. Like, it paid for itself and endorsements even before the show aired. Right. And it's had this amazing, amazing staying power. Yes. Twists and turns and ridiculous notwithstanding.
But it's really about a show about relationships and loyalty. So what have we learned about loyalty by watching shows like Survivor?
Oh, what have we learned about loyalty? That's such a good question. People always ask me that. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I have a kind of a chapter in my book about Survivor, and I look at kind of how it teaches us about kind of the little loyalty within the little groups in our own lives, groups of two and groups of three. And if you look at, you know, the little betrayals, the little loyalties that are happening on Survivor in these small groups, you can maybe think more about how these things are playing out kind of in your own life, in these groups of two and groups of three, right? Like in your romantic relationships, in your relationships with your friends, your family members, and your colleagues as well. So even though these are kind of, and it, like a lot of shows, right? Even though there's these wacky premises and ever-changing rules and they're stranded on an island and no one gets a razor, right? At the same time, the basic human dynamics are translatable to our own experiences.
And we're always wondering ourselves, how much trust can I put in someone? How loyal will they be to me? And we watched like this Vanderpump stuff that's going on and disloyalty and cheating and things like that that wrecks people's lives. So I guess they're looking at that as some sort of yardstick to compare themselves or those others around them.
Right, absolutely. I mean, these are kind of basic fundamental human emotions, right? Like betrayal, loyalty, love, hate, you know, it's all playing out on the screen and it's playing out in our own lives as well.
Let's go to a caller. We have Mary on the line and our number is 833-877-8255. I'd love to hear what you got to say about reality TV programs. And Mary, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, I've got to tell you that
The very first one I ever watched was The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. And it's so fascinating to me to see how people are looking for love, how there's always got to be some conflict somewhere. But they are, you know, they put themselves out there, and I really admire them. And it's just what you were saying a minute ago, you know, there's betrayal and then there's trust. I don't know. I just love The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. It's so fun. And I also like to watch the baking shows.
Yeah.
And how nice they are to each other.
Those are great. I appreciate
that's all.
Yeah. Well, Mary, thank you so much. So why do you think people watch these programs like The Bachelor and Bachelorette? I mean, it's seen that's and we've seen some reversals and crazy stuff there, too. But, you know, how you know, the whole premise is nuts that some guy is going to show up or woman is going to show up to find their life partner.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, research shows there's kind of a mixed bag of reasons why we watch reality TV. And the reasons we watch The Bachelor might be slightly different from the reasons that we watch baking shows. You know, one of the things that people keep coming back to is kind of this voyeurism aspect, right, where you kind of watch the train wreck to remind yourself that you're not of the train wreck, that even though, like, your life might be messed up in its own ways, at least you're not, like, one of these, like, 17 women competing on reality TV for the marriage, right? So there's the train wreck. There's also, you know, we keep coming back to this idea that reality TV, in some ways, even though it's so zany and out there, can be really relatable. Because going back to the original Real World, right, it traffics in these broad archetypes of people. So there's usually one character or more that you can kind of grab onto and say, I'm most like that person, right? I see myself a little in that person. I can relate to that person. It's true of the original Real World. And I think that's true of The Bachelor as well. And I think they intentionally, there's evidence that they intentionally cast that way. So it's kind of this interesting nuanced thing where we're like, oh, this is a train wreck. This is not me. But also, oh, it's kind of relatable in some ways. And I can kind of see myself in it a little bit, even though I would never go on a show like this.
So there was a reality TV program that breathed new life into the format. And Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Let's give a listen.
Some help? Well, Courtney wasn't so difficult.
If I'm out by 4, that's all I need. And I don't think I'm going to get there and change my mind. And if no one's going to be ready on time and I'm, like, lingering around, and I'm leaving at 4 p.m. and I don't care what anyone says.
That was when my meeting was, so.
Where's the meeting?
It was supposed to be at my house. Unless
okay.
I do it at 7 in the morning.
Do it at 7 in the morning.
Who are you meeting with? Stop. Be nice.
Team, you're just,
do
no
it
one
tonight.
Wants you in the shoes.
I don't care. Okay, no, no,
get
no.
Get the out of here and go. Get the out of here and go. No one wants you in the shoot. I'm planning it.
You guys
I'm planning
just
the
be
shoot.
Nice to
so
each other.
So we don't want you in the shoot. I'm planning it.
Did
so
I already say
in,
this
so
morning I didn't
go.
Care
then
to
go.
Do
then
it?
Don't be in it. Because you're so
this
annoying.
Morning.
Perfect. Then shut the up.
No, but
what?
It's like I'm not
Who
scheduling
is
it
so
annoying.
Yes, she is
so annoying.
You are annoying, Courtney. You're being
but
annoying.
Why? Because Kim wants it around her schedule?
Do you know what we're fighting about? There are people who
have her day.
Maybe if you
want
business that you were passionate about, then you would know what it takes to run a business, but you don't. So don't even act like
you
know what I'm talking about.
So that's like if you listen to that like it's music, it just builds and builds and builds. And like, what is this all about? I don't know. I don't know why anyone cares about what any of those people are doing and whatever, but apparently they do. Why?
Oh, they absolutely do. You know, I agree. It's kind of like jazz, right, with all the different notes. Yeah, no, I mean, the Kardashians have been extremely, extremely influential. And what's interesting to me is to think about why so many people really hate the Kardashians, right? Like a lot of people really, really hate the Kardashians. But at the same time, a lot of people are watching the Kardashians. In some ways, that's kind of a metaphor for all of reality TV, where you have all these people kind of saying it's trash and garbage. But at the same time, these shows are immensely popular and vastly more of us are watching than are not. And the Kardashians have had kind of tremendous, tremendous staying power over the years. You know, I think one of the things that kind of resonates with people about the Kardashians is this idea of family, right? Because even though, you know, my life is nothing like Kim Kardashian's life on a lot of levels, right, I can relate to being kind of part of a family. Families still kind of are the nuclei of American society, right, or just society in general. we're all part of families. Almost all of us, right, are part of are parts of families, whether it's families of birth or families of choice or both, right? And so we can all kind of relate to feuding with a sibling, even though, you know, the feuds that they have are about things that, like, I cannot relate to in my own life. I can still relate to the, like, kind of everyday conflicts that they have.
But, I mean, it's who is – they're always jockeying for who's the top person, I guess, you know, the alpha in the family.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that's the subtext a lot of the time, right? But, again, also you have, you know, those archetypes in the family, right? And people can say, like, well, my favorite is Courtney because she's a sensible one, or my favorite is Chloe because I can relate to her because I'm the funny one, right? And so – at the same time that you're kind of looking at them maybe to hate watch or maybe to see them as kind of exotic, their lifestyle in some way, there's still that element that you can relate to on the show.
You point out in the book that more people can name Kardashians, or people can name more Kardashians than they can Supreme Court justices. And that is, that means we're in trouble. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about reality TV. You can call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. This stuff is important. It does say something about us, and we should all learn how to watch reality TV. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Some real cafe.
How you let your wife do this though? Why you didn't check your wife, bro?
Like, why didn't you take the phone and say, "Miracle, this my wife. She playing."
She's here majority of the time. I'm usually not here. I'm working. That's what I do, you know. So I'm normally gone. So I didn't realize how deep it had gotten. Like, bro, you need to stop with that. I didn't realize that it went over what she originally planned for it to be.
Once I got to know Miracle, like, I thought she was a really sweet girl.
Are your feelings
They're genuine. Yes, everything through our text messages, that was all me.
But to be clear, you expressed, at least from the little bit that was made apparent to us, like, romantic feelings.
Some of it was pretend.
You're a sick individual.
I am a sick individual.
I know you are.
I have lupus and I live with it every day. My mind is good.
All right, that is from Catfish, as we're talking about reality TV today on The Source on Texas Public Radio. Catfish is, to me, is more than a TV show. I mean, it is a phenomenon. It's on all the time, and this is something that could only happen today in this world. As old as reality TV we can say it is. I mean, Candid Microphone led to Candid Camera. That's way back in the 40s on the radio and stuff. So, but this is new. And what does it say about us, Danielle?
Yeah, I mean, it says so many things. Where to begin? I mean, one of the things it says about reality TV, right, as you say, is that it really does kind of, it is this shape-shifting form, right? Like, just when we think reality TV is out of the game, like, it comes back with something else. And it's always kind of capitalized on new technologies, right? It's always had this kind of multi-platform approach, even going back to the days of The Real World, where it's like you can watch the show, but then you can also listen to the music that's being played on the show and buy the music. So it's always kind of linking up with new technologies today with social media, right? And so even I think moving, I'm sure there's an AI reality TV show in the works. I can't imagine there wouldn't be, right?
Right. So does everyone know what catfish means these days? Do you think that word?
Oh, right. Catfish. Yeah. Right. So basically, you know, like to trick someone, right, into an online relationship by pretending to be someone that you're not, using someone else's photos or videos or fake photos.
Either to extort money out of them or to just to mess with people.
Just for fun. Yeah.
It's sick.
I think that, you know. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, people do that. And we see it on the show, how that plays out. And these people and their motivations and how whacked out they are. Let's go to a caller. We do have Matt on the line. And Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Does the rise of reality TV really say anything new about people, though? Because what I think about is, like, why do people choose to be on these shows? And part of it to me, goes back to, like, this scene from, like, the original Rocky movie back in the 1970s when these guys are sitting around a bar watching a fictional Apollo Creed, you know, kind of, they're talking negative about him. And Rocky looks at him and goes, hey, guys, he took his shot, and all you're doing is, you know, I just see a bunch of losers sitting around making fun of a guy because he took his shot and none of you did. And so I'm just wondering, you know, like for me personally, I used to think about the people who are on these shows as like, what a bunch of weirdos, losers, you know, whatever. But then, you know, my thinking kind of changed. It's like, isn't a big part of this them just taking their shot and they're just kind of selling themselves to the public in a full, in a medium that maybe didn't exist 30 years ago? Well, and, you know, that's really my question. I don't know that okay. It really doesn't really say anything new about people. I don't know that it does.
Okay, well, Matt, thank you for that. So are people puffing themselves up or creating a character when they go on these reality TV programs? I remember Puck on Real Life and on Real World and how he presented himself. And he was a tragic figure, as a matter of fact. But still, you know, it was all played to the cameras.
I mean, yeah, sure, that aspect of it certainly has been, like, heightened in recent years, right? Again, people have gotten really savvy about not just the people who consume and watch it, but the people who go on the shows right now. Right? There's a plan now, right? You want to be an influencer. You want to sell a product for a lot of these people, right? You want to get SponCon. So absolutely, I think that's true. I mean, yeah. I think the caller makes a really interesting point that, like, how much of this is new, right? You can even go back to, like, ancient Roman gladiatorial games. Like, maybe that was the original reality TV, right? Or wrestling, professional wrestling that's been around for a long time. So, yeah, I mean, I think we've kind of always gravitated toward kind of forms of reality TV. So, I mean, again, I think it can teach us something about us, both in terms of, like, our basic human emotions, as we've talked about. But I think present-day reality TV can really teach us a lot about what's happening in the present day in terms of political issues, in terms of gender, race, class, sexuality, how we organize families, and how we hang out with our friends.
I wonder about, well, maybe go back to the ancient Greeks and their theater, yeah. And that was seen as a important catharsis for the community, and they required people in the population, to citizens, had to attend the theater and see these performances because they thought this was important for their emotional life. And so I wonder if we watch things like, okay, I'm going to play a clip right here from The Housewives, and whether or not we get a sort of Munchausen release of emotions when we watch something like this.
Does anyone want a jelly bean?
Kelly.
Or a lollipop?
Kelly,
calm down.
I need to talk
Can
about
just
you.
Calm down and stop with all this, like,
no, something happened where she thinks that you did something evil.
I don't care.
Or you did something.
It doesn't matter. The food was delicious. Your
she also thinks this one's evil and that she was dressed up.
I don't say she's evil. I said she's channeling. Channel. The word was channel. The operative word was channel.
Channeling the devil, you know, in the same sentence I was angelic.
I'm feeling sorry for Kelly
exactly.
right now because something's happening here.
I feel sorry for you because I think she's crazy.
Something's happened.
She's
awesome.
Because she thinks something's wrong with you.
I do.
Like you're absolutely crazy.
Okay, I'm crazy.
Something's happened here.
We all think you need to get help. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah, because I don't like you.
Oh. That's not an illness.
You, your dad passed away, and you're like here. It's creepy.
All right, why are you creepy?
It's totally creepy.
She needs to get help. You know, I went away as soon as my mother passed away. My mother died on a Friday.
Don't ever tell anybody that, Ramona. That is a
The four of us are actually sane, and she's crazy, and now we're picking on her, okay?
Okay, let's stop.
She has a problem.
I feel like you're trying to kill me every night, and I threw up.
She's paranoid.
The night before I came. Because I don't want to be a part of this.
Go to sleep! Go to sleep! You're crazy! Go to sleep!
No, don't be mean to her.
All right, Danielle. I know you're laughing.
I know. I know that episode. It's a Scary Island episode.
Yeah.
From Real Housewives of New York.
So what about that? I mean, do you get a release by watching something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting thinking about that juxtaposed with what we were saying about the gladiatorial games, right? Because I think, you know, there are a lot of people, I hear this a lot, that reality TV is a sign that we're, you know, moving in some terrible direction as a society, that society is kind of unwinding or unraveling. And, like, people like to think of history in terms of, like, a progression toward something. Either we're getting better or we're getting worse. But, I mean, in these gladiatorial games, people were literally watching people die for sport, right? And so I don't think the Real Housewives is necessarily worse quote unquote, than that morally. But I do think it's that same kind of impulse, right, that we've talked about, that voyeurism, where you can look at the people on these shows and say, well, at least I'm not like that person over there, right, who's going on that show and having that ridiculous fight.
Well, the previous caller was making the point that people are using this platform in order to become entrepreneurs. They're producing, what, skinny vodka and other weird things to become, you know, make money.
Yeah, I think that's true. And so was the Gladiator, right? Like, that was kind of their career. So I think that's always been true, right? That people have, in professional wrestling, that's been true as well. I think it's just a different medium through which to do it, right? And more avenues through which to do it now. But I mean, it's certainly true, right? That a lot of people who go on reality, just objectively, a lot of people who go on reality TV today are, you know, doing it to kind of promote themselves in some way. But I don't think that necessarily takes away from the fact that these shows can, you know, teach us something about ourselves, both in terms of our kind of small scale group dynamics in terms of Survivor, right? Or in terms of kind of our larger cultural dynamics in terms of, again, these big dynamics of gender, race, class, sexuality, you know, all these kind of weighty things that are lurking in the background of American society.
Let's go to caller. We have Jim on the line. And Jim, you're on the air.
Thank you, David. I don't really see anything redeeming about what I've heard. The commonalities that I've heard in the clips that you've played, including people talking over each other, people talking with anger and anxiety, and then people talking ugly to each other. So to me, it's just another indictment on, you know, how sad it is that we can't communicate constructively. There's a lot of bullying that goes on. There's a lack of civility. And to me, it just makes me sad that the people who get the most attention and that it's so popular in our society, I can't find anything constructive or redeeming about behaving badly towards each other.
Jim, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate that take. So these programs, they survive on conflict. They look for conflict. They cast for conflict. They foster it. They ply people with alcohol. This is what they want. They want these big scenes. And so is it just as important as a negative example for we model ourselves not to be that way? Because they could not do a reality TV show about my life because I don't behave that way, Danielle.
Well, I don't think people are necessarily watching and saying, okay, I'm going to do the opposite. I wish that were true. I haven't seen any like scholarly evidence that people are watching in order to say that's what I should not do. But I mean, the point that it's not redeeming, I mean, a lot of things that we consume, we just consume for fun and there's no redeeming value to them, right? So reality TV is just one of those. At the same time, what I think is redeeming about reality TV is that it can teach us about ourselves as a culture in really important ways. When something is this consumed by this many people and it's influencing this many people, it's really important to pay attention.
Danielle J. Lindemann is a sociologist and author of the book True Story, What Reality TV Says About Us. And Danielle, thank you so much for coming on The Source.
Thanks so much for having me.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kaylee Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.